Good morning. Thanks for being here. Each day that we've been able to provide you updates, we're glad that we're able to do that. And as from previous days, I'll no exception, give you an operational update, then turn it back over to Mr. Kirby. Don't have a lot of additional detail to offer you about the attack yesterday at the Abbey Gate, but I can confirm for you that we do not believe that there was a second explosion at or near the Baron Hotel than it was one suicide bomber. We're not sure how that report was provided incorrectly, but we do know, it's not any surprise, that in the confusion of very dynamic events like this can cause information sometimes to be misreported or garbled. We felt it was important to correct the record with you all here. You've now seen that we've updated our casualty list to include a 13th service member killed in action. Our thoughts and prayers continue to go out to the families and to the teammates that we have lost. This is a devastating time for these Gold Star families, a title no one wants to hold, but we absolutely hold in the utmost respect. I can also report that two flights landed at Ramstein today, carrying our wounded personnel from the attack. These personnel have been transferred to Landstuhl Regional Medical Center and are receiving care. In Kabul, commanders on the ground continue to assess the risk and the dynamic situation there as they have been since the beginning. Force protection remains paramount with the continued threat. We've continued the evacuation mission yesterday, as you saw, as you reported last night, and I'll give you an update of how things have gone in the last 24 hours. Yesterday, 35 U.S. military aircraft, 29 C-17s and 6 C-130s, departed with approximately 8,500 personnel. Combined with 54 coalition aircraft departures, an additional 4,000 personnel left Kabul for various intermediate staging bases. 89 flights total yesterday out of Kabul, totaling approximately 12,500 evacuees now safely out of Afghanistan in a 24-hour period. In the past 24 hours, more than 300 American citizens were evacuated from Afghanistan, bringing our updated total to approximately 5,100. We continue to maximize our efficiency, and since U.S. and coalition forces began the evacuation, approximately 111,000 evacuees have departed safely. The State Department consular officers continue to screen and process people arriving at gates around Kabul. Some gates have been closed, as we reported, but American citizens, SIV applicants, and vulnerable Afghans who have the designated and proper credentials will continue to be processed for departure from the airfield. There are still approximately 5,400 individuals on the airport as of this report awaiting for flights out of Afghanistan. We have the ability to include evacuees on U.S. military airlift out of Afghanistan until the very end. The Department of Defense has the continued responsibility to support the State Department in the ongoing movement evacuees through our intermediate staging bases and safe havens all the way to the United States in the coming days and weeks. On that topic, here's a quick update on the military installations in our safe havens and staging bases in CENTCOM and UCOM that are helping transition all these flights. CENTCOM locations, including Al Udeid Air Base, steadily receive, process, and transfer passengers to follow-on locations in Europe and the United States. Today, UCOM will receive about 19 flights and approximately 5,000 passengers in Germany, Italy, and Spain, including the naval station Rota. In turn, six flights will transport about 3,300 people from Europe to the United States. I cannot say enough how important the contribution of our allies and our partners has been in this massive global operation. Additionally, more evacuees continue to arrive stateside and are moving to designated installations throughout NORTHCOM. The NORTHCOM Commanding General, General Van Herk, will provide a more focused briefing on this extensive effort in his brief later today. In conclusion, I'll reiterate what General McKenzie said yesterday. There are more than 5,000 U.S. service members in harm's way, saving as many people as they can. It's a noble mission. We have seen firsthand how dangerous that mission is, but ISIS will not deter us from accomplishing this mission. We appreciate your thoughts and prayers for all of our service members who are carrying on this mission today. Above all, we remain focused on evacuating American citizens and other personnel designated by the Department of State, safeguarding the lives of those whom we are providing assistance and keeping American troops safe. Thank you.
Okay, I just have one other thing to add, and it's a good segue from what the general ended with. Today, the Department of Defense can announce that it has authorized Marine Corps Base Quantico, Virginia, Fort Pickett, Virginia, and Holloman Air Force Base, New Mexico, to provide additional support to the U.S. mission to evacuate Afghan special immigrant visa applicants, their families, and other at-risk individuals. These installations join Fort Lee, Fort McCoy, Fort Bliss, and Joint Base McGuire-Dix in providing this support. The Defense Department will continue to support the State Department in providing temporary housing, sustainment, and support inside the United States for a capacity of up to 50,000 Afghan special immigrant visa applicants, their families, and other at-risk individuals. U.S. Northern Command will coordinate the details of all this with the State Department, the Department of Homeland Security, and, of course, the Department of Health and Human Services as necessary. And it'll be provided under presidential drawdown authority to the maximum extent possible, with additional support being provided on a reimbursable basis. And as General Taylor let you know, we have General Van Herk, the commander of U.S. Northern Command, coming into the briefing room with you later this afternoon, and he'll be able to provide a lot more context on that. With that, we'll take questions. Lita.
This is probably for the general. The president has said he vowed basically to get back at ISIS. How difficult will it be for the U.S. military to do that type of operation, considering the lower number of troops and the difficulty in getting intelligence on the ground? And then, I don't know if this is you or John, can you just talk about the number of people that we'll see getting processed over the next several days? Is that number going to gradually go down? Do you have out the number of people you think you're going to, or what's your ballpark estimate? Yeah.
All right. On your first question on our capabilities and abilities to protect ourselves or to also to conduct the strikes, as you said. As I've said all along, we have resources with the CENTCOM commander and with the commanders on the ground and the capabilities to allow us to execute any type of those operations as those are required to do.
So, Lita, again, we're still planning on ending this mission at the end of the month. And as I said the other day, as we get closer, and we are getting closer, you're going to see us begin to make those muscle movements to pull out our troops and some of our equipment as appropriate with any retrograde. What we want to do is preserve as much capability for as long as we can, both in terms of the security footprint, but also in terms of the ability, as the general alluded in his opening statement, to moving out evacuees. Lives are still the priority, and the lives of our troops, and of course, the lives of evacuees, and trying to continue to get as many out as possible. So there will be a balance over the next few days as we continue to process through that transition, as we continue to, as what we call, retrograde. And I can't give you a specific number on any given day, but I think you'll see us adjust as necessary to make sure that we're achieving that proper balance. But we will be able to fly out evacuees right up until the last moment, that's going to be the goal. And if I may, you didn't ask this, but I want to take the opportunity to convey to all of you that as we did before, when we began a retrograde, a withdrawal back in April, we were very judicious about the detail that we were putting out. And I just want to level set with all of you that you're going to see us become more judicious now going forward as we get closer to the end of the month about what information we're giving you in terms of how many troops on the ground. I would not expect us to be giving that number out in going forward, and what the capabilities are and where they are and what they're doing. We're going to be very, very mindful of the operational security element of this. And I think yesterday is a stark, grim reminder of why that's important going forward. I know that's not what you asked, but I wanted to take an opportunity to get that out there. Jen.
John, how can you say with such certainty, and how can General McKenzie say with such certainty, that the Taliban were not involved in this suicide bombing? I understand that you're reliant on them for protection around the airport, but are you ruling out them being involved because you're so dependent on the Taliban right now?
Actually, I didn't hear General McKenzie put it that way, Jen. In fact, I think in one of the questions he got, and I think it was Idris's, you know, he said, Idris asked, was there a failure? And the general said, of course, there was a failure somewhere, obviously. And he even alluded to the fact that it could have been at a Taliban checkpoint. We've not been certain about that at all. There'll be an investigation. We'll try to learn as much as we can about what happened. And I really don't want to get ahead of that process.
And in terms of ISIS-K, how many ISIS-K prisoners were left at Bagram and are believed to have been released from the prison there? And why weren't they removed before the U.S. pulled out to someplace like Gitmo?
Well, I don't know the exact number. Clearly, it's in the thousands when you consider both prisons, because both of them were taken over by the Taliban and emptied. But I couldn't give you a precise figure. And as for emptying out, remember, I mean, we were turning things over to Afghan National Security Forces. That was part of the retrograde process, was to turn over these responsibilities. And so they did have responsibility for those prisons and the bases at which those prisons were located. And of course, as the Taliban advanced, we didn't see the level of resistance by the Afghans to hold some territory, some bases, and unfortunately, those were bases that the Afghans didn't hold. But all of those responsibilities were turned over in accordance with the retrograde plan back from April. Idris.
I think this is more for the general. Yesterday, General McKenzie talked about wanting to talk to the Taliban about pushing the perimeter back as one of the sort of ways to avoid another incident. Has that happened? And I know you can't say it by how much, but has it significantly been pushed back? And what are you seeing in terms of flow to Abbey Gate? Is it less people being allowed in? Is it still a rush of people, which could lead to a similar incident? What are you seeing today at the gate?
So what I can report as my discussion with the commanders there on the ground is that multiple activities have taken place to increase the force protection, specifically in communication with the Taliban of how they are executing their checkpoint operations and communication when there. So I would say there's been multiple. I don't want to go into the details of the exact of what the communication, but I know that has happened. And what we have seen today is a little lessening of what we would say total capacity of people in and around gates.
Yes, Nazira.
Thank you, John. As Jen said, ISIS, since yesterday, people were worried about everything about the Taliban. They were psychologically under a lot of situations. Some of my family get targeted and tortured by the Taliban. But since yesterday that ISIS created, Afghan people are more worried. And do you think that it's another civil war will start in Afghanistan? That's why most of Afghan people question. And everybody now want to leave the country because now it's double. Before was only Taliban. Now ISIS also show up one more time, their activity. Do you think that's another civil war?
Before I try to answer that question, I do want to take the opportunity on behalf of the Department of Defense to also make sure that we express our condolences for the Afghan people who suffered in yesterday's attack. We know that there were a number of killed and wounded Afghan civilians at the airport, and that there are families that are dealing with the same devastating, terrible news that now Gold Star families here in the department are dealing with. So again, on behalf of the secretary, we offer our condolences and thoughts and prayers. I wish I had a crystal ball. I wish we could know for sure what's going to happen in Afghanistan. We don't. We obviously don't want to see the country torn asunder through civil war. But that's why whatever the future of Afghanistan is from a governance perspective, we're going to stay engaged with the international community to make sure that Afghanistan's leaders are held to proper account for the way they are governing, and that Afghanistan's neighbors also try to play a constructive, productive role in whatever the future of Afghanistan is going to be. Though we will not have a military presence there, the United States government will still want to see what we can do in the international with the international community to make sure that that Afghans can have the best of all possible outcomes for their future. But I think it would be foolish for us to try to be too predictive about what's going to happen right now.
You is not change the policy again to be involved again in Afghanistan?
The Commander-in-Chief has made a very clear decision that it is time to end America's involvement on the ground in the war in Afghanistan, and we're going to execute that decision as we should. David.
John, for the record, would you clear up the confusion over the service affiliation of the dead? It sounds like we have a total number of 13, but
that's
breakdown
right.
Within the 13 is a little unclear. The Marine statement said, at this time, 10.
Yeah.
So can you tell us what it is, and then I have a question for the general.
I'm not able to break it down specifically right now, David, and I want to defer to the services to speak to their specific number of casualties. As you can imagine, they're having to have difficult conversations with a number of families, and we here at the department don't want to get ahead of that process. So. I think on that one, I would just defer to the services.
And General, you didn't answer the question about whether the Taliban have met General McKenzie's request to push the perimeter further out away from the airport. And he also said that he was going to ask them to close some specific roads. Have they done?
Sorry if I didn't add that level of specificity, but I know those, just exactly what General McKenzie had said, had been passed to his commanders to have those discussions with the Taliban to take not only those specific measures, as he mentioned there and you mentioned, but other activities that will increase the security and the facilitation of those getting through. So,
do you know what
that happened? The discussions?
No.
I don't know. I cannot report at this point what actions the Taliban have taken in the last, but I know that those discussions are happening and that have happened.
Okay, I got to get to the phones a little bit here. Laura Seligman, Politico. Okay, we'll come back to you, Laura, if you're not able to pipe in there. Tony?
Hi, John. Can you hear me?
Sir.
Okay, yesterday the president said we're going to be in a circumstance where I believe numerous opportunities will continue to provide access for additional persons to get out of Afghanistan. This is after the 31st. He said either through means that we provide or are provided through in cooperation with the Taliban. Can you give me a sense of the planning you're doing to take that direction to heart? And what are the military implications of the president's desire for still removing people after the 31st? Will there be continued talks with the Taliban, staging a force in the region to get more people out, et cetera?
Yeah, Tony, I think my colleague at the White House and at the State Department have addressed this question before. I mean, we, the interagency, the U.S. government will pursue a variety of ways to help any Americans who want to get out after our military presence at the airport has ended to be able to help them get out. And it's while Afghanistan is a unique case, it's not completely separated from the larger effort that the United States government pursues all over the world. When we know that Americans are at special risk, we do what we can to get them out. And that doesn't necessarily involve the United States military. So I'm not going to I certainly wouldn't speculate one way or another about what's going to happen after this particular mission ends. But I would not envision a significant military role in that effort going forward. Barb.
Okay. Going back to what David was asking, if the U.S. military knew that there were improvements to be made, such as closing roads and pushing the perimeter back further, why wasn't this discussion engaged in before before the attack? Why wasn't the point pressed? Why weren't these improvements asked for by the Taliban? Because you're saying General McKenzie was very clear he's asking for this now.
Barb, I would tell you, from the very get-go, even before we had a specific threat assessment, force protection was of paramount importance to General McKenzie, certainly to the Secretary, and I don't want to speak for the Chairman, but I think I can, for General Milley as well, in this regard. I can tell you that from the very beginning, force protection was always at the front of everybody's mind. And force protection, as you well know, particularly in a dynamic environment, is something that changes all the time. And so as we got more information, we made adjustments to force protection measures to try to do the best we could at what we thought were the specific threats we were facing. And you heard the general talk yesterday about even overwatch in the air. I mean, there was a lot of effort being done, which included, as the general said, included daily communication with the Taliban about the nature of the threat and sharing with them the appropriate relevant information about what we knew. Now clearly, all of that effort, and there was a lot of effort, clearly fell short in some way, because this attack was able to be perpetrated, and we did suffer, as well as our Afghan friends suffered casualties. We're going to do the forensics on this, Barb, and clearly try to figure out what went wrong, because clearly something went wrong. But it would be irresponsible if we didn't act immediately to double down and make sure that we were being as anticipatory as possible, because we still believe there are credible threats. In fact, I'd say specific credible threats, and we want to make sure we're prepared for those. And I don't think, and I'm sure you can understand, that just by virtue of the fact that we may be taking other steps, doesn't mean that they would have necessarily been the proper steps for what we saw yesterday. We have additional information, and so what I would tell you is what you're seeing us act on, to the degree we can talk about it, is based on information that we have. And I think I'd leave it at that.
When you say you have additional information, can you tell us, do you mean you have developed additional information since the attack? Do you still believe something is potentially imminent?
I thought General McKenzie covered it very well with you yesterday. We certainly are prepared and would expect future attempts, absolutely. But I won't get into the specifics of what those are and why we're doing what we're doing.
Do you have additional intelligence since the attack?
We again, without talking to intelligence, we're monitoring these threats very, very specifically, virtually in real time. And I think you can understand I wouldn't get in more detail than that. Tara.
Two questions for General Taylor. In the wake of the attacks, have the commander, U.S. commanders on the ground had improved communications with Taliban commanders, not only in improving security, but potentially in getting SIV applicants or Afghans through the gates? And secondly, in the wake of the attacks, since ISIS is also a problem for the Taliban, is there potential there to coordinate to actually target ISIS?
So when we say improve communication, I would answer that with we are continuing, communication. So improve, I would say every day that is improving because we have more repetitions. We're able to continue to have open lines of communication. So the specificity of what is being passed back and forth tactically to allow for a better security environment, I would say is improving because those repetitions are happening and the understanding of the Taliban of what needs to take place is being reinforced. And so I think, yes. And then your second question of passing on specifics like, what are we looking for here? What is the threat that we need you to look for? Yes, that is absolutely being passed from the commanders on the ground to those Taliban commanders to ensure, as Mr. Kirby said, you know, things like yesterday, we understand what to look for. We understand what the threat is to try to prevent it.
Specifically to target ISIS, though.
To any those threats, yes, those ISIS threats that could come in.
Okay, and then secondly, there was a secondary explosion later yesterday where U.S. forces were doing controlled detonations of equipment. Can you talk about the type of equipment that is being destroyed in the retrograde so you don't have to fly it out, but it doesn't fall into the wrong hands either?
Yeah. So the actual specifics of what type of equipment was destroyed, I don't have that. But what we have said is that, you know, the commander has the authority there to destroy equipment that they feel is responsible. So as we talked about controlled detonations, I think that was your specific question. That's what we call that, a controlled detonation that could take place if the commander decided to destroy some type of equipment.
I'd only add that, as I mentioned earlier, lives are going to be the priority, Tara. So there will be, you can expect that there will be other equipment and material things that will not be brought back with us. We're going to do this in a judicious way. Some stuff will obviously come back with us, but for the aircraft that are departing, as we get closer to the end of the month, we want to prioritize passenger seats as much as possible. So you're going to continue to see things disposed of in a responsible way as we get closer to the end of the mission. And I think that people would expect us to do that. Yeah, Wafa.
John, what's the department's assessment of the capabilities of ISIS-K? And is there a real concern that they can use Afghanistan to launch attacks against the United States post-August 31st?
Well, obviously they're a serious terrorist threat. And that was brought home to us in pretty stark ways yesterday. We take the threat very, very seriously. I'm not going to speculate about future threats. What I will tell you, and the president has made this clear, the secretary has made it clear to the leadership at the Pentagon that we're not going to allow attacks on the homeland to emanate from Afghanistan again like they did 20 years ago. And we do have over-the-horizon counterterrorism capability available to us to make sure that that doesn't happen. And I think I'd leave it at that.
Really, do you believe that Taliban can stand to ISIS-K, can defeat them?
I think that the threat from ISIS is real. Nobody wants to see that threat grow. I cannot speak, would not begin to speak for Taliban capabilities or Taliban intent. Obviously, there's significant animosity between these two groups, and they don't share interests. But it would be foolish for me to try to predict the degree to which what operations the Taliban may conduct against ISIS-K. All I can tell you is the direction that this department has is to not allow attacks on the homeland to emanate from Afghanistan again, and we are committed to that, as well as counterterrorism operations elsewhere around the world, because the threat has metastasized outside Afghanistan to other places where we also have to maintain a focus and a degree of over-the-horizon counterterrorism capability. Let me go back over here in the back there.
Thanks, Sean. Two questions. First, can you speak to any rescue ops that have happened since the attack?
I don't think there's been any. You mean by rotary?
Yeah.
Nothing additional.
And then the second question, which is probably more for the general, over the last 5 days, we've seen anywhere from 89 to 94 flights leave Kabul, but we've seen somewhere between 12.5 and 21.6. Can you explain why the number of evacuations fluctuates so much, but the number of flights has remained relatively steady?
Yeah, so I think what you have seen is I'll just break those in two bins. First, as you look at the U.S. flights, have stayed pretty steady, right, in those numbers. You know, as other countries are coming in, they are evacuating certain numbers, you know, of where they are in their capability or requirement. So I think that is where you've seen some of the differences in the outward flow. And I think, I mean, you really have to go back to, as my number today, 110,000 total. So, you know, as we started, you know, just under almost, you know, just a few weeks ago at zero all the way up to 110,000, we would see some of those numbers start to come down.
Let me go back to the phone. Sam Legrone.
Hey, John. As part of the exit, is it the U.S. Intention to leave a functioning airport with like radars at work, computers at work? I mean, what's the obligation for what you all leave behind? Thanks.
The airport is functioning, Sam, and we're going to need it to continue to function right up until the very end. So, I mean, I think the general assumption is that as we depart, I mean, we're going to need to depart from a functional, completely operational airport. That's our assumption going forward, that'll be operational right up until we're gone. And as you probably heard Secretary Blinken say the other day, that we're working with the international community. There are several nations that want to contribute to the effort to keep it operational and that are willing to work with the Taliban to that end. Certainly I'd let them speak to that effort. Gordon?
Any Taliban operations against ISIS aside, any future things, whatever, do you have any assessment of what ISIS fighters at the prisons that they may have taken action against or killed, other than some of the ones that we know about?
I do not know.
Is that something that's knowable, like that you guys have sought to find out and can't find out?
I don't know if that's knowable, Gordon. I mean, I'm happy to take that question, but I don't want to raise expectations here on our level of the granularity of intelligence we may have gotten from these prison releases. I don't want to overpromise here. I'm happy to ask that question, but I can't promise you a good answer. Anaira.
Thank you, John. The 50,000 SIV capacity that you referenced earlier, can we expect those folks to be processed at the same four states previously reported, or will it be a capacity beyond, I think it's New Jersey, Virginia, Texas, and Wisconsin?
No, I think I added some extra facilities here today that I want ones in New Mexico, Holloman Air Force Base, and then two in Virginia, Quantico and Fort Pickett. And the Secretary has been clear that if we need more, because the demand's there, that we'll work with the states and we'll work with the services to identify potential future U.S. military installations, but those are the ones that we are operating from now.
Just a quick follow-up. Currently, it's a 14-step process to get an SIV application validated. Given the security challenges yesterday, is there going to be a change in where those are processed? Are folks being processed overseas and then brought to U.S. bases for, you know, final relocation?
I honestly can't answer that question. That's really what for the State Department. They run the SIV process. It's not a Department of Defense equity. Janie?
Thank you, John. May I ask the general, please? Thank you. Sorry, next time I will bring more for you. Well, President Biden said that also the, let me take care of this because President Biden said, also the General McKenzie said yesterday that he had consulted with international partners. Had he discussed about military options with the international partners or our allies, including South Korea? What are the primarily U.S. primarily military options?
Yeah, so I can't speak for General McKenzie and the you know, the discussions, other than what he said yesterday is you know, continuing to coordinate with all of our, you know, allies and partners that are helping us with this right now is extremely important. You know, to the ability to continue to synchronize all of the airlift that continues to come in and ensuring that as timing goes forward, all of that is well planned together is extremely important. And I think I'd have to turn it over to back to General McKenzie for any of those other specifics questions.
And another one, what are the U.S. Special wishes for the our allies and international partners? Do you have any wishes for from them?
See, I'm sorry, I
wishes.
Wishes. You know, from the operational side, I think our wish is, just like I said earlier, is continue that the support and the work together as we continue this mission forward is extremely important. Thank you.
Can I follow up, sir, about something that Gordon asked about? We just have been hearing some reports that there have been some attacks by ISIS-K against Taliban checkpoints in the city. Are you seeing any evidence of attacks that ISIS-K is attacking those Taliban checkpoints?
I have not seen those reports.
And can you give us any more clarification on the sharing of American citizens' information as well as SIV information with the Taliban? There were reports yesterday that the U.S. officials were sharing that information.
Yeah, I don't think there is sharing information, as you would say in that question of, like, we are giving information. What information is very important right now is at the ground level to ensure that as people approach checkpoints, that those Taliban checkpoint leaders have and understand who's coming, what documentation they're supposed to have, and go, because that's really important for us to ensure the time that people are not in areas and just, you know, staying there for long periods of time. You know, the commanders on the ground are continue to coordinate. How do we continue to increase that throughput through checkpoints, through gates, to get on HKIA as fast as we can? That's very safe, you know, to get them there. Thanks.
Megan.
How many troops, U.S. troops, are still on the ground at HKIA, and how is the security posture at the gate changed? Are there more or fewer troops going in and out of the gates? Is there more overwatch of the crowd to look for suspicious activity?
So, yeah, kind of back to what Mr. Kirby said earlier, as we talk about troop numbers and capability, has not changed for us to secure all the gates, to be able to process evacuees, and our ability to rapidly turn aircraft as they arrive and get those up. And as you talk about force protection at the gate, I'm not going to get into the specific TTPs that those you know, junior leaders are taking down there, other than we continue to learn every day from the day before, and we work within all the capabilities we have to ensure one, that we can continue people to come in, but also stay safe.
When you say you continue to learn, does that mean that you have switched things up in order to make it more safe?
I would say patterns are things that we try not to, you know, get into. So, you know, I would just tell you, as the most simple operational piece there, we're always doing things that we can to keep us safe and not create patterns.
I'd only add to that, Megan, as I mentioned to Barb, you know, but we still have active threat streams, and we're taking steps that we believe are appropriate to those streams, and I think I'd leave it at that. And I want to foot stomp the boots on the ground number. As the general mentioned in his opening statement today, more than 5,000 today. We are not going to get in going forward to a daily count of what's on the ground. Just going forward, as we get closer now to the end of the month and the end of the mission, you don't expect daily updates on what exactly how many troops are there at any given moment. Mike.
Now, when you said that there is going to be an investigation into what happened yesterday, were you talking about a full, like a criminal inquiry with forensics people on the ground and interviewing possible witnesses? Now, who would be doing that, and how do you do that in the middle of a war zone?
I wouldn't characterize it as a criminal investigation, but it'll be as comprehensive as General McKenzie needs it to be to try to do the forensics here and figure out what happened and what we can learn from it going forward. It'll be a very complete, thorough investigation. I will leave it to General McKenzie to describe for you sort of the architecture of what that's going to be. But it's not like we haven't sadly had to do this before, right. And we know how to conduct these investigations. Yes, sir, you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kevy. My name is Moshe Fazal. I'm representing Names Communication Network, NCN. Is U.S. service members doing incredible job with sacrificing their life? With consideration of that, my question is some few strategic. Do you think the removal from Afghanistan, it will reduce your control within the Asia and the Pacific? The U.S. control. So for you and the general.
It's not about U.S. control in the Indo-Pacific. It's about protecting our country from threats and challenges that emanate from that part of the world. And it's about revitalizing our network of alliances and partnerships to help our partners in the international community do the same. That's why the Secretary's first trip was to the region. He just came back from the region. The Vice President just returned literally this morning from the region. We are laser focused on the Indo-Pacific and the security challenges, as well as the opportunities that are there. It's not about U.S. control. It's about U.S. partnership. Sylvie, you've been very patient.
I know you don't want to speak about the details of the circumstances of the attack, but can you tell us if it was at the gate itself, or in the middle of the crowd, or at a checkpoint? Was the guy walking, or he was in a bus? Can you give us some little details?
First, I'll start off with details are continuing to be collected as it goes back to the question about continuing to learn as much as we can. Because as you know, when attack initially starts, you know, you have to fight the fight. Then where we're at right now, ensuring, you know, the respect and dignity of our wounded and those that were killed in action. So, but as we look at the details, at approximately as we saw yesterday at about 17:48 Kabul time, there was what we reported as a suicide borne vest there that was exploded right at and around the gate. We don't know the exact location, you know, but it was right outside in vicinity of that gate, and then followed by direct fire from an enemy position that is not exactly known. That was outside in what we'd call just north of that gate area also.
How many assailants were killed? Was it just a suicide bomber plus the shooter, or how many people, enemy?
It just goes back to what I said. Right now, what we know, there was shooters. You know, we don't know the exact number, but one with the suicide vest.
Louis, go ahead. Wait, no. Gordon, we've already got you. Louis, go ahead.
Were there any troops killed by that gunfire?
Like I said, we're asking, you know, very detailed questions about the fight that will continue to be collected. I can't answer, you know, numbers of that's just, I would say, you know, that could come out. But just knowing the facts, the incredible, you know, devastation that happened there, I think we should just leave it there.
Can I just...
Hang on just a second. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. So my question, kind of following on Lita's earlier. Yesterday, the president said that we will hunt down and basically get revenge on the ISIS attackers yesterday. Can you just explain to the American public who might be wondering, hey, we had 25 troops on the ground. What will that look like if we go into a situation where we're going to go and hunt down these ISIS people?
Yeah, I think, you know, as we look at currently, I've answered that question of we have, you know, options there right now that we can, you know, ensure the commander has the ability to take action as you know, those opportunities present themselves. But I'm not going to go into, you know, and try to think about the, you know, how a decision General McKenzie would make in the in future operations.
Louis,
just a quick follow up on the gunman. Was there more than one gunman, and was that gunman killed or whatever?
Like I said, you know, those information is still coming in. I would say what we do know, absolute fact, there was a, you know, a suicide born IED right there, and gunfire. That's that's for sure that we know.
My other question was going to be this. You have 31 American casualties overall. That's a significant number at one location. I mean, what? How can we explain why they were they concentrated in one area? Was there a shift change underway? I mean, how is it, or were they spread apart in one line and that's just how the blast was? Yeah.
You know, use a line. This answer is not going to be, you know, rewarding to you, that, but it goes back to, you know, the commander will figure all those out at the due time, right? You know, and those are the questions that I think are very appropriate, you know, and people, you know, want to know this. But right now, what I can tell you is the commander's continuing to execute the mission, make sure that, you know, other forces in there can continue there and ensure that those information, as I think a couple of the questions we answered earlier, will come at the proper time.
Therese?
Yes, actually for General Taylor. I know it's been said numerous times that the focus of the mission is to get evacuees and Americans out as quickly as possible. But for those that were injured during the attack yesterday and taken to the local hospital, has there been any talks about setting up security for those individuals? I'm hearing reports on the ground that there are concerns that ISIS may attack that hospital. So are there any talks to possibly help keep those Afghan civilians, safe from a potential attack? And then once they are well enough to travel, how will they get to the U.S. as well?
You're talking about Afghans that were injured in the attack. First of all, what I can report is that there were some Afghans there that were part of that were treated by, you know, U.S. and other forces immediately there. I'm not fully aware of the reports of, you know, on the hospitals in Kabul, because I do know that there were Afghans taken to multiple locations in Kabul.
Okay, we have time for just a couple more. Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Kirby, you said that lives are the priority. So my question is pretty straightforward. Should the U.S. or should Americans expect more U.S. casualties in the next few days?
We obviously don't want to see any more casualties. That's why we are monitoring the threat streams very closely and taking what we believe are the best possible steps to prevent another tragedy like this from happening. I mean, that's obvious. The Secretary made that very clear to leadership last night and this morning, that force protection will remain a paramount concern, as it always does.
And just to add to that, apparently there's a bottleneck at Dulles Airport with these the U.S. airlines coming in with refugees at Dulles Airport. Are you aware of this, or refugees being stuck on the tarmac for hours and hours?
Yes, we are aware of those reports, and they have proven accurate in the last couple of days. It's really more an issue for Customs and Border Patrol and the process. So I don't want to speak to them or their process, but as we understand it this morning, they have worked through the difficulties, and we believe that wait time now upon landing is going to get much, much shorter. But I would refer you to my colleagues at Customs and Border Patrol to speak to that. Okay, thanks very much. Oh, one more? Go ahead.
How many Afghan SIVs have been flown out so far, or other Afghans without green cards or permanent status?
Check me on this, but we looked at the number just before coming out. It's just, we have just under 7,000 now that are in the States and being processed. And that number will change every day, obviously, as it should. Okay, thanks everybody. We'll see you again I'm sorry, I said 3:00. It's 3:30 this afternoon. General Van Herk will be joining me. I do apologize for the delay this morning. We were getting updates literally as we were getting ready to come out to see you. We'll do the best we can to be more punctual, but thanks, and we'll see you later.